It is great to see everyone once again and to be together tonight. Just a reminder again that Sunday starts our new quarter with all of our breakout classes again for the younger classes. And that begins Sunday and then continue, of course, into Wednesday. So we'll be looking forward to that as well. But appreciate the study through the course of the summer as we've gotten to look at the apostles on Sunday morning. And lessons that we have learned from them and their lives, but then on Wednesday night to be able to look at morality and examples of morality, what morality is, encouragements, specific instruction on certain moral things. And so we've looked at a lot of different topics through the summer. I fell behind, but all of those are finally online, so you can get them on the website if you missed any of them or want to go back and study some of them. But we wrap up tonight looking at the ultimate example in all things and looking at Jesus. The particular title was The Moral Things Jesus Went About Doing. What a challenge. This is what John had to say about it. John 21 and verse 25. There are many other things which Jesus did, the which, if they should be written every one, I suppose that even the world itself could not contain the books that should be written. So John spent 21 chapters, and he wrote about the life of Jesus. And there were three others that give us an account of Jesus' life. And they said, we couldn't get it all in. And you want me to do it in 20 minutes. So that's the challenge we have tonight. I forget, I need to look up the statistic again. It's impressive when you consider how much of Jesus' life we know nothing about. I believe the statistic lies somewhere between about 2 and 3 weeks. If you were really to boil down the details that we have of Jesus' life, it adds up to about 3 weeks' worth of data. There's a whole lot in the 33 years that he lived upon the face of this earth that just simply aren't recorded for us. A lot of details, a lot of works that he did that simply didn't fit in the record that God was trying to reveal to us. Now, we have the things that we need. We have certainly the things that he desired for us to know. But keep in mind, there's so much more. And so when you consider those inspired writers, and they're talking about all that Jesus did, how do you look at the life of Jesus? How do you summarize it? How do you condense an already fairly condensed account of Jesus' life? And so I thought about the idea of, well, what were the moral things that Jesus went about doing? The first thing that really came to mind is, well, everything that he did. It's impressive. We know these things, but to sometimes stop and think about them. That here is a man who was focused in the entirety of his life on doing the will of his Father. And so as others would try to summarize his life, think about the short, brief statements that are given. Maybe you consider Luke. Luke tries to summarize the gospel account that he recorded as he opens a new account, the rest of the story, if you will, the book of Acts. And in Acts 1 and verse 1, he summarized it this way. He said, I spoke to you before in a treatise of all that Jesus began both to do and to teach. That's a summary of his life. Look at the amazing things that he did and the amazing things that he taught. Peter tried to summarize his life as well. In Acts chapter 10, Peter summarized his life this way. In verse 38, he said that Jesus went about doing good. More specifically, he says he went about doing good and healing all that were oppressed of the devil, for God was with him. This was an active person who went about doing the will of God. And so revisit that thought that we started with. Everything he did was moral. Everything he did was right. He sought always to do the will of his Father. And so you look at various passages. Go back to the beginning account of his life when we're really first introduced to him. Now, I understand we have birth accounts, but the first time we really see Jesus making a conscious decision that's recorded for us is in Luke chapter 2, when we know that account of Jesus being left in Jerusalem. And there he is with the scribes and the teachers, and he's in the temple and he's asking and answering questions. And when his parents find him, he makes the response in Luke chapter 2 and verse 49, "Knew you not that I must be about my Father's business?" Other versions say, "Did you not know that I would be in my Father's house?" As I understand it, the concept there is, did you not know that I'd be about the things or the things concerning my Father? Where'd you expect me? And so from the earliest choice at the age of 12 there that we see him making, he's about his Father's business. He's going about his Father's will. And as you close out that chapter, we're going to be reminded that Jesus then grew in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man. He kept on developing, even spiritually, in his life. Think about John chapter 4. Our minds go to John chapter 4. We think about the woman at the well, but when the disciples come back and they're wondering, why is he talking to her? They ask him about being hungry. Or what they did was going to the city to find food. Come back, are you not hungry? I have a focus that's greater than food. Not that food wasn't important, but my interest is on something else. And so in John 4 and verse 34, consider what Jesus said there. As he would say, "My meat is to do the will of him that sent me and to finish his work." Where's my priority? My priority's on doing God's will. It's not the things of this earth. Again, not to say that food's unimportant. Just go, 7 days without it and see how important it can be in our lives. But my focus, my intention, is all on the Father's will. John 8, verse 29. "I do always the things that please him." How focused? Occasional interest. I give them one day a week. Every so often. Oh, do always the things that please him. There's a sense or a concept there of conscious decision. I'm making this choice to be pleasing unto God. And then finally consider Luke 22 and verse 42. You go from Jesus at the tender age of 12, focusing his will and his attention on doing his Father's will, and you understand this is a focus that he would then keep throughout the entirety of his life. Here you have him before one of the hardest things of his life, and he knows what awaits him. He knows what he's facing. Now he's praying in the garden to his Father. And yet still, his will is still the same. Luke 22 and verse 42. "Father, if thou be willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done." It seems simple, but that's a large part of the equation there. That Jesus set his mind to do the will of his Father. He set his mind, "I'm going to live according to his will, according to his instruction." And so if I want to see the moral things that Jesus did in his life, I have to start there, understanding he set his mind, his will, his focus on doing the will of his Father. And that same drive or that same desire ought to drive us in our lives. You want to look at someone that followed up in that example. Consider the life of the Apostle Paul. Again, how was he able to go and be such a great example and one whom we still look to and consider? Not because, again, he was Superman, not because he was empowered to do something far greater than anybody else that could, but because he shared much of that same focus. And so we sing the song, Galatians chapter 2 and verse 20. I'm crucified with Christ. I put my life, my will, my desires, my interests, I put those things to death. I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. I'm not dead. Physically, I'm still very much alive. I'm still very much active. I'm crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. But yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. There's a different will, a different drive, a different desire. I'm doing His will. I've put to death those works of the flesh that we read again in Galatians 5. And determined to live according to the fruit of the Spirit, following His will and His instruction. The life that I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God who loved me and gave Himself for me. There is a change of submission, a change of direction. I want to do the will of the Father. And so, that's what Paul would remind us in 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 1. Be ye followers of me even as I am of Christ. There's a limit to how much we follow anybody else. We follow Christ. And as much as we see somebody else following in that same example, imitate that. But as soon as they depart from Christ, you stop following that example. You stop following them. Turn to Christ. Because He was set on doing the will of the Father. And so, in so doing, He was doing that which was moral. I think a lot about Matthew 5 and verse 16. Verses that we probably learn from an early age if we're growing up in a family that's studying the Bible or a congregation that is, and we think we commit that to memory. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. It seems, again, a simple verse, but then you stop and begin to think about it, how profound, how deep, how great it is. I can't let my light shine by doing my own will. Because then I'll glorify me. But when I submit to the will of the Father, it's not my will, it's not my life, it's not my example anymore that's being shown. I can truly point people and say, I'm following Jesus. I'm following a far greater example. And now when people see that work, now when they see my life, it's one that honors and glorifies God. And it exalts the very will of God. We show within ourselves, this is how good it is. We've got to jump on that thought to Romans chapter 12 just for a moment. But that same thought comes up here in verse 2, as you have this idea of not conforming, not being shaped or molded according to to this world, but rather we are to be transform. A metamorphosis, a change from the inside out, because our heart, our mind, our will is changing according to our knowledge of the Word of God. He said, rather be you transformed by the renewing of your mind that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. And I think there's a concept there that proving is first to ourselves, that we try it. And we get to see for ourselves, this really is the best life to live. This really is that good and perfect and acceptable will of God. But then as you keep on living it, you become an example and you show to the world, this really is the best life to live. This is that good and perfect and acceptable will of God. And you ought to try it too. And so Jesus, what did He do? Everything He did. You read the gospel accounts. And He went about doing good. And that's what we ought to imitate in our lives. But then follow that up with maybe a little more specific. I thought of the idea of compassion. So everything, but particularly the idea of compassion in his life. What drove Jesus? I would suggest to you, first and foremost, it was doing the will of the Father. But then I would also suggest to you what drove him, what motivated him, was a compassion, a love that he had for others. There was a consistent display of genuine interest in the physical and spiritual lives of other people. And some great examples, one that we maybe oftentimes think about, Matthew chapter 9. Matthew chapter 9, we see the busyness and the work of Jesus. Verse 35 of Matthew 9 beginning, it says that he went about all the villages and cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom, healing every sickness, every disease among the people, their spiritual and physical needs. And when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them because they fainted, were scattered abroad as sheep having no shepherd. These were a people that, even maybe when they didn't realize it, they were hungry. They were thirsting for leadership, for spiritual direction. And they were basically starving. They needed a shepherd that would lead, that would guide them in good paths. And he said to his disciples, "The harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest. He will send forth laborers into his harvest." He saw and responded to the needs of others. But as I thought about that, the book of Mark has always impressed me. You read through the book of Mark and pay attention to action verbs. Straightway. Of course, now they left me. Straightway. Immediately. Then. I mean, all of these words that point. Mark's jumping all around the place. I mean, this is an action-packed movie if you were watching this on the big screen. This is no slow romance. This is the action-packed adventure, because we're jumping from scene to scene, and he's going here and he's going there. And we read earlier Matthew, Mark chapter 6, and you see in that the idea that when did they rest? They're going about, they're active, they're busy. And so in Mark chapter 6 and verse 31, he finally tells his disciples, "Come yourselves apart into a deserted or desert place, rest a while." You need some time to kind of relax and to re-energize a little bit, to rest. "For there were many coming and going, and they had no leisure so much as to eat." We haven't even had time to slow down to have our lunch yet. And so they departed to a desert place by ship privately. Let's get away. And the people see them get on the boat, and they outrun them so that they arrive. Verse 37, they depart. They run afoot thither out of all their cities, outwent them, and came together unto him. "We were trying to get away from you people, and you came and followed us. Next time Mike goes on vacation, we're all going to find out where he's going, and we're going to follow him." What about this? Well, sometimes you got to turn off the phone and not tell people where you're going. But he shows up in this time to rest, and then here's all the people. And he's not angry. He's not upset. He makes time for the people. In verse 34, Jesus, when he came out, saw much people, and he was moved with compassion toward them because they were as sheep not having a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. He still worked with them. He still labored with them. He still loved and showed that great compassion. So many great examples. Matthew 20 and verse 28, the reminder even to his own disciples, "The Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister. I didn't come to be served, I came to serve." And that's the creator of all the world. We think about Philippians 2. We've been studying it all month. But I think it's important to remember, where does it start? He's telling them to keep others in mind, to not look out for the things of ourselves only, but the things of others. Have that kind of compassion towards others. And then start talking about Jesus. I oftentimes present in Philippians chapter 2 is there's your first lesson in verse 1 through 4, and then he gives you three great examples, and he starts with the best, Jesus. Let this mind be in you, which was in Christ Jesus. That's the example he showed us. That's how he showed us how to live. He set an active example for us because he came and he lived this moral life. And he showed us how to do the same. Did he not tell his disciples in John 15, verse 12 and following, "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you." I've shown you that example. I've shown you by my life. I've shown you by my living how you ought to love one another. And I'm about to give you a far greater example. "Because greater love hath no man than this, than to lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do whatsoever I command you." I've shown you that example. Now you go and do the same. And so in all this and all these things, he was a model for us. Think about Philippians or John 14. In John 14, verse 8 and 9, again, a great example of his life. John 13, he's just served his disciples. John 14, he's still comforting them. He's the one about to go to the cross. He's the one about to endure the worst agony of his life. He's the one that ought to be being comforted. And he's comforting everybody else. And in the course of that conversation, Philip is going to say, John 14 and verse 8, Philip says unto him, "Lord, show us the Father, and it suffices us." And Jesus' response, "Have I been so long time with you, and thou hast not known me, Philip? He that hath seen me hath seen the Father. And how sayest then, show us the Father?" You've seen him. What is he claiming? You take all the moral attributes and characteristics of God, and Jesus says, "I came and I put them on display for you. I showed them to you in my life. Now you go and you live that way. You go and follow that great example." What a charge to us in our lives. I don't know how we're going to do it, but we're going to stop there, and we'll leave point 3 as our invitation.